Hi, this is Jack Canfield from The Secret, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So good morning and welcome to the show. It is 6:30 in the morning. I had to get up pretty early today. I've got so many things to do. But it's Thursday, which means it's time for me to have a chat with you. So if you hear my little sleepy voice, I've been up for about, 35, 40 minutes. And you know, I was really interested. It was interesting that when I woke up this morning, I really wasn't sure what I was going to talk about. And I had a lot going through my head as far as this this climb we're doing up Kilimanjaro. And a friend of Jen's had sent an article over to her about these guys that had died up there. So I thought, oh, you know, I suppose really I hadn't looked into the dangers as far as, you know, I'd looked into what we have to do, and I looked into, equipment. I looked into, a lot of things around safety. But I had never sort of sat and given it any time to look into what are some of the mistakes that people make on the mountain. And, 19,340 feet, it's an interesting challenge because, like I've said on a few shows, that so much of the mountain is this internal mountain. I know that my buddy Eric, who's organizing this, he's been up five times. So when he talks about this, he talks about this being, the toughest day of your life, the last day, because the oxygen is about half in the air that you're breathing, about half of what it is down below. And altitude sickness can hit anyone. And interestingly, some of the stats show, there's about 10 people a year die on the mountain, and which is a lot, we thought. I was telling my buddy Mike, who's coming with me, my friend, and I said, did you realize that? He said, no, I had no idea, and nor had I. I never really looked at it. But what fascinates me about that conversation is that there's a reason for those deaths, which I find fascinating, and one of them is certainly, something we could do something about. I mean, the primary one is heart attack. People do it, and, they're just, it's their time. There's thousands of people hike the mountain every year, and, you never know when your heart, or if you look after yourself, or if you've got things going on in your body. And so, there's going to be that person who's just, their time is up. They just happen to be on the mountain. And, I've seen that all over, where you just don't know. A friend of mine's father died the other day, and he was just going to work. It's, he works at the airport, 4 o'clock in the morning, and, he was alone, and he felt a little pain in his leg, and boom, there he was, stone dead after just a few minutes. And that was just his time. And I think that's one area that we see. The second and third areas are really around ego. And I thought, I think it's really important. I've learned so many lessons around this. And I can't say, I think ego's, obviously there's a part of ego that's quite healthy. But there's another part that is a trap. And I know I've been trapped in it many times. And I think that, what's going on right now with Lance Armstrong, and I'm not this guy. I've just read a couple of articles, and obviously I see what he's done, the money he's raised. But, the sort of self-imposed prison that he's put himself in when you sort of live a lie like that, that's so big. It's Bernie Madoff is another one, In fact, I heard a reference, the athlete of, Bernie Madoff is sports, Lance Armstrong. But I'm not a big believer in crushing people when they're down. I don't think that's a healthy thing. And it's easy to hate. That doesn't serve anybody. But it's more interesting to look at and be fascinated by. Like, I was fascinated by Bernie Madoff. Fascinated. I even read the transcripts in court, because I just fascinated that somebody who really has so much prestige and so much, a lifestyle, children, and so much wrapped into his life, so public, and living this life for so long, and so many people gullible and jumping in with them. So I didn't feel, and even friends of mine were, I mean, if you look at one of my early shows, What Bernie Madoff Couldn't Steal with Matt Weinstein, I really, it's a great show, by the way. I mean, I really empathize with that. But, you know, even Matt looks at me and says, you know what? Who I came out, how my wife and I have come out of this. You know, we have more than we ever had going into it. And so, you know, again, I urge you, if you're listening to what's going on with Lance, not to get into that, oh, look, he's down, let's kick the bugger, right? And, you know, who could he, what could he do? Because I think ego, I've been trapped there. And I think if you look in the mirror, I think most of us have at some point. And I mean, not everyone, but I believe that we do get trapped. It's easy to get trapped. Before I carry on, though, here's a great song by Beyonce about that. It's too big, it's too wide, it's too strong, it won't fit, it's too much, it's too tough. He talk like this cause he can back it up. He got a big ego, such a huge ego. I love his big ego. I love his big ego. You know, so, you know, when I'm looking at this sort of this thing coming up in Africa, and I'm leading a team up there, and I look at that responsibility, and I look back in my life for examples of where, you know, I've taken lives in my hand, and where I had to learn some of these lessons that hopefully I'm man enough and big enough to be able to remember in the moment. Because, you know, what killed these boys up there, these were young boys, and they were saying so often, it's not the fittest people that make it. It's actually the unhealthiest people that make it up and down Kilimanjaro. And because they move more slowly, and because, you know, if you want to prove something, young people, and this is what happened with these guys, you know, they bursted through camp, they wanted to go ahead, and the big killer on the mountain, of course, is altitude sickness. And so I think, you know, this high altitude edema that happens in the lungs and the brain. And so as I've read more about it, sort of understanding it, you know, you can't help but read the stories that go along with it and the decisions that people make. And of course, you know, once you're trapped in this thing of having to reach the top, that, like Lance Armstrong, you know, like Bernie Madoff, it's a disease that, you know, in these big cases, we spotlight it and it's easy to see. But in our own cases, in our own lives, you know, dancing with ego where it's strong and it's healthy and it's necessary for us to step up, step out, step into the spotlight, you know, believe that what we have to say, you know, matters. You know, I always say, though, you know, you can't lead a cavalry if you look funny on a horse. And you can't, you know if you're leading a cavalry if you turn around and there's people following. You know, that great scene in Braveheart, where Mel Gibson is, you know, rallying the troops into battle. But this is a true story. You know, it takes a lot of ego to stand in front of thousands of people and say, look, you know, we're going to possibly die today. But, you know, would you be willing to trade all the days from this to that to one chance, just one chance? You know, and so that, you know, that's one of the lines out of his famous speech there. But, you know, so I'm fascinated by this sort of this dance and this fine line between where ego takes over. And I'll tell you a story where it happened to me. In the worst way, in many ways, and almost cost some lives. And you know, I'm not very proud of this, but I mean, at least it will illustrate for you where it's easy for me to sit behind a microphone and say, oh, you can, you should do this. And, you know, I don't believe in that at all. But I do believe that, you know, if there's a lesson that we can learn, and maybe you're trapped in it, maybe your ego is right now is something that's stopping you from crossing the bridge to a kick-ass life. Because, you know, when you're trapped in that bubble of ego, it's very, very hard to surrender to the truth. And I believe, you know, I like that language, surrender to the truth. So, you know, what happened, we were down in the Caribbean, and me and my buddy, Robert Belensky, he lives in Ontario. Him and I have sailed together a lot. And in fact, we've done a lot of things together. We're very, very different people. I'm totally in love with the guy. We come from very different backgrounds, different families, and you know, I feel like a family member in his home, which all of my close friends, I feel that way. But you know, we would charter sailboats down in Tortola, in the Caribbean, the British Virgin Islands, and we'd go sailing. And what happened was, you know, Robert dedicated his life to sailing, and I kind of skimmed the stone across the surface. I mean, I've sailed across the Atlantic in a 45-foot boat. I lived on a boat for a year, so I have some experience, but I never really dedicated myself. I mean, he became an instructor. You know, he would deliver boats in different parts of the world. He's delivered boats sailed into Europe. He's delivered boats across the Atlantic. You know, he sailed across the Pacific. This guy has tremendous pedigree, and somebody, if you're looking to have a boat delivered, phone me. I'll give you his name. Just totally, totally cautious. And everything he does, because of his background again, he's very, very cautious. And on the other hand, I am very reckless, or was more and more in the past. And primarily, on this trip, what came to light was I had my other friends come down. So we invited his mom. We invited my friend, my really, really close friend, Mark and Francine, Mark's dad. And so we had sort of this group of us on the boat. And, you know, so now I've got one friend who's exceptional at something. And I have other friends who are brand new. They're learning how to sail. And my ego trapped me in the middle of, I was scared for them to see that Robbie was better than I was in this particular endeavor. And I when I look back on that whole time, I mean, I don't know if everyone noticed it. I certainly noticed it afterwards. But it took a life-changing event to occur in order for me to really see myself. And it took a moment, and as I look back, once I saw it, I looked back over my whole life and I found other chapters in this same book, other times where my ego was so out of control. And so what happened on this boat, you know, I was, from the moment I got up to the moment I went to bed, I was somehow obsessed with proving that I kind of knew. I, you know, not sort of, normally Robbie and I was co-captain the boat, which we did on this. But instead of seceding and allowing his wisdom and his understandings and learning and being the student within the mix, learning as I went even more, because I obviously know a lot. But instead of just, I wanted so badly to appear that I knew more than I knew. And I felt challenged by his, you know, his how much more he knew. And I really, you know, kind of secretly throughout the whole, without really understanding. I mean, one thing for sure, I didn't realize at the time I was doing it. Not to that, but I remember the consumption inside, the way my mind was consumed, and how in moments when there was time to prove what I knew, that I would somehow, like a gladiator, fight the fight, jump into things where I could have just sat back. I could have sat back and allowed the miracle of that kind of a moment to come together. And it's really funny, you know, I remember when we first started chartering in Tortola, we had stories told to us, you know, of people who had come there, and one particular doctor had come there with a group, didn't want to listen to the orientation. Look, I've been sailing my whole life. I know exactly what I'm doing. Look, and trapped in the same bubble that I was trapped in. And, you know, that crew, that charter lasted about 27 minutes, maybe 35 minutes, something like that. He sailed out of Tortola straight onto a reef. And that's the poison the ego can really when it's invasive like that, and probably invisible, because again, you know, we're in that proving stage. And as a recovering prover, I know then, as I read these stories on the mountain of these kids and other people that have died, the ones that have died from something that was avoidable was this, you know, the ego of, oh, I got to get to the top. And, you know, one thing I've been saying to my team, and certainly is, you know, the top, we're already at the top internally. You know, I mean, saying yes and buying the ticket and preparing ourselves is already such a massive win in so many ways. And the top can't be us being intoxicated by, oh my gosh, you know, somehow we're going to fail. I mean, if we can't hike for 1 or 2 days, and realize that we have to turn around. And again, that's the power of altitude sickness. It can strike anybody. The healthiest people on the earth. In fact, I sat next to a guy on a plane about 2 or 3 years ago, and he was telling me about his wife, who's a ultra marathon runner and incredibly fit and a triathlete and all these things. And this guy is sitting there with his little pot belly, and he was saying, we hiked a mountain and she had to turn around and I got to the top. And so there's this real understanding that many people who die on that mountain, 10 a year, they're in the ego bubble, and this this intoxication with what other people think. And that's truly where I was trapped. I was trapped in this intoxication with what people think. And so, I found that typically Robbie and I have sailed so much together, and it's always been so effortless and fun. But with the addition of my other friends, and so wanting to prove to them somehow that I knew more than I knew, and that that I Robbie was not the person with the experience. We were jointly with experience, and it was really interesting to watch myself. If I had a video camera and listened to the conversations. And the tension that I brought up, and it was, by the way, a life-changing trip, of course, for me. And they had a great time, but fascinating to see that. And in saying that, I think it's time for a song. I've been talking a lot, don't you think? Hey, you are so beautiful, man. So the story, the continuation of this story where lives were almost lost came. I'm a diver, and I pride myself on being able to get people in the water, and people who are afraid, and with patience. And I used to work as a diving instructor. So here I am on the boat, and Mark and his dad decided to get their sort of learn to dive. So I was sort of helping them. And I remember Robbie coming over, who's a great diver. We've done so many fabulous dives together, and really feeling challenged inside. I remember this one time on a beach where he came over and is helping Mark with, understanding how to purge from the regulator. And I remember feeling this threat again, and you have to understand, when I look back on my life and I look back on these lessons, this is something where, at the time I was unaware of. And so, me sort of like a male dog, like, hey, this is, I'm doing this, and, feeling this threat. And so pushing him away unnecessarily. And anyway, so finally we get out we have two boats with us. So there's a couple of groups. It's not just us. We have another boat with a really good friend, Marek, Polish guy, and so many great friends of ours out on the water. And so what we would do, we had a boat full of Polish friends, and then there was our group on this other boat. And they're just great people. I mean, I absolutely love these people. And so we decided to go out on a dive one night, and we'd gone on a long sail. And I can't remember the island we were off, but we were kind of anchored off on our two boats. So we have two smaller boats, the sort of dinghy type boats for those of you that are not sailors, right? And Robbie led the first dive out, and I was going to lead the second dive. Now, in the second dive, we had myself, Marek, who has really, really bad arthritis in his hands. Great, great guy, but, not very strong. And we had Mark and his dad, right? So there's four of us. And just as we're about to leave, a fifth guy chirps up, who is a very nervous diver, and says, "Can I come?" And so we're saying, "Sure, why not?" Which is, again, no big no-no. Big no-no is, buddy diving is buddy diving, and so two people dive together. And so we wait for Robbie to get back. Robbie takes two boats and his dive team. Now, when Robbie dives, he has his safety equipment, and he has an inflatable balloon that's visible from the top of the water wherever he's diving, which is very important. And remember, we're off on an island with no one else around. and we're sort of taking these boats out to the reef. So by the time your boat is we're the small boat, the dinghy is where we're diving, we can't really see the main boat. The main boat is invisible. It's tucked around into a little cove, or the main two boats. So Robbie comes back, tries to sort of give me some information. Again, I'm so intent on proving, and my ego is sort of suffocating. We go out there, and as we go down, it was about 40 feet. Marek signals to me, experienced diver, we dove loads together, experiences me the way to go. And I decide, because Robbie had given me some coordinates, I decide that we'll follow those coordinates, even though, I remember, my judgment is clouded at this point. So we start to the dive. And immediately I realize there's something wrong. There's something going on, and I can feel it. Because I've dove so much and I can feel, but again, you know, I'm still trapped in this bubble. And suddenly, you know, this huge shark comes on below us. And by the way, you know, there's nothing in the water that can really harm you apart from ignorance. And so the two new divers really get very close to me real quick. So I'm thinking, oh, this is good. But then I still feel this. I mean, I can tell with the water, I can tell that, you know, we're caught in a rip, which is like we're being sucked. And so I turn around and I attempt to kick against it, and I realize there's no way we're going back to where the boat is, and we're just getting sucked out to sea. So I bang my tank with my knife, and I manage to grab their attention. They're miles away by now, because as soon as I stop and turn around, they're getting whisked out pretty fast. So this is where my experience kicks in. This is where, you know, my understanding kicked in. So we grab hands, and I make sure that we're all linked up, and we come to the surface. And when we get to the surface, you know, and I said, look, number one thing is we want to stay together. We got to stay together. So, you know, and now there's no way of getting back to our boat. We're getting pushed out. It's getting late. So, you know, it's not that far away from darkness, maybe an hour. And so I think, you know what, as long as we're together and no one's panicking. So I'm playing it down pretty good. So, I mean, what I'm doing right now is smart. How I got to be there was where my ego led me. Now, I mean, it's the better part of me has come to the surface. And now it's a question of survival and making great decisions. So this isn't about ego anymore. This is about life and death. And I realized, you know, we've got five divers in the water, and we've been pushed out to sea. And there's the people that know that we're diving have no dinghies. So that, you know, they're very limited in what they can do. They can't bring those sailboats across that reef. So, you know, we're on our own. I know that for sure. And so as we're kicking, we hit a coral head, and the five of us bump into this coral head. So I said, great. So just stand up on this coral. So we get on the coral head. Remember, new divers, no experience. One very nervous diver and one with arthritis, you know, and there's me. So we get on this coral head, and I'm thinking, okay, well, we can survive here, or we can push on to and hit one of the other islands. But if we miss one of the other islands, we're going to be drifting out to sea. So I decided the best decision is to stay there. So then I said to the guys, I said, look, you know what? You guys stay together. Whatever happens, if one falls in the water, all jump in the water and just stay together. You'll be fine, right? I said, I'm going to see if I can get the dinghy. So I get into the water, and I'm not the strongest swimmer. And so I just pummel into the water, and I'm swimming as hard as I can, and I'm swimming, I'm exerting energy, and I turn around, and I'm about 7 inches from the coral head. It's just so strong, this rip. And now I'm exhausted, and I'm like, I'm looking up, and the fear in my heart is just like, oh my God, what have I done? And this is when I got that moment, that glimpse of what led to this, you know, a glimpse. I didn't get the full picture yet, but why we were here. And so then I had this great idea. So I go down on the bottom, and I just pull myself along the bottom across the corals, and my hands are cutting. I have no gloves on, you know, and I'm pulling myself. And I took a compass bearing on the surface, and I just keep pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling, until finally I hit this. I hit the rope for the dinghies. And anyway, I'll tell you that next in a bit. I don't know if that was a bad word or not. so anyway, the point that what happened next was, you know, I was able to pull myself up the rope. But then I had to find the strength to get myself in the dinghy, which I, you know, the adrenaline was kicking in. It's getting dark. And I go over and pick up the guys off of this coral head. And they still don't know what's going on, really, because the newness of it. Marek does. I can see it in his eyes. So I take them back to the boat, and they all get on board. And I dive in the water on my own, and I just start to cry. You know, I start to really just feel the sense that how close my ego had led these friends of mine to a really horrendous situation, to be, you know, being pulled out into the ocean at nighttime with people not knowing exactly where we are or without a means of rescuing us, because there's not a lot of sailboats going to be out in the water at night. And we were tucked into a little cove, you know. Anyway, so I sort of plan this trip in my mind, and I start to look back on the lessons of my life, and knowing that one of the big, you know, killers on that mountain is ego, and that need to prove and that need to hit the top. You know, oh my goodness, what will people say if I don't make it? You know, and I, as I chatted, Mike and I were hiking out the other day when we were hunting. I don't know if you listened to that show or not, but, you know, I was really putting myself very, very often in every step into that mountain. And yesterday, Jen and I went hiking up a mountain behind our house here. And, you know, making these decisions early about how I want to be and who I want to be and the best part of me to sort of come out and be present in those moments where ego is going to come and poke its little fingers in your back and say, hey, come on, you can make it. Come on. Yeah, you can do it. Don't listen to that porter. What does he know? You're okay. Yeah, you're. and again, everything I've read is around that. So hopefully, you know, that there's a lesson here for you. And I think that what I found is that this whole idea of truth, that's why I said it took me my whole life to discover those 8 most powerful words, tell the truth all the time with compassion. And am I tempted to lie? Of course. There's times when you don't do something or you're going to look smaller because you think, you know, once you share this, you know, that I feel the old, you know, old ego? Well, if you don't have to tell the truth right here, you know. So there's this wonderful, I mean, again, I could tell you probably story after story after story where my ego led me into this place that was unnecessary. But it took those many times for me to start realizing that it existed, that it was this compulsion of how I was seen. And that's where I look at Lance Armstrong and this compulsion to win and to be on top and this compulsion to not show my own humanity, my own weaknesses and the things that, you know, where I have to ask for help. And then I realized the beauty of that, you know, the beauty of when I don't know something now and I ask for help. And somebody says, hey, listen, I have no idea. Can you show me that? You know, the beauty of learning and the beauty of being really present with other people and allowing them to bring their gifts to the party and to sit at the party table and to be a kid again and learn with that fascination without the need to prove. And that's why I was driven to that very, very close encounter. I mean, you know, you're really tapping on death's door in those situations, not with just my own life, but with friends' lives and you know. And unfortunately, I don't know if they ever realized. I mean, I've mentioned this before, realized the significance of that situation. But if you've ever lived on boats and if you've ever been in the ocean, you know that the treachery and the moment to moment shift in situations are monumental and you know in a moment. And that's, I think, what's, you know, when I think of this mountain, I think of the same thing. So I'm really, really excited. I'm excited to step into this, you know, leading from the back, and really that quiet traits of leadership where hopefully I can discover inside myself the true power that exists to allow other people to shine, to their brights to shine, you know, brightly, and to be humble in my learning, you know. And so that's what I'm asking of myself. And we only got a couple of minutes left here, so I think we have time for one more song, don't you? Listen to piano. So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this. You know, again, I'm sitting here in my house cult. That's the beauty of podcasting and doing a show like this. You know, I haven't even cleaned my teeth yet. I got out of bed and I thought, you know, I got to get this done because I've got other shows coming up. And I got to tell you, we got Tim Ferriss coming on the show this next week, and John Assaraf's coming back, and the amazing Mari Smith. She's the networking guru, teaching you how to social media. So we've got some great shows in the pipeline coming up, and I feel very, very humble and blessed. And with that, you know, I want you to go out there and really, you know, just check in with yourself. You know, when are you being driven by the need to prove? When are you being driven by how other people see you? And when are you being driven by truth? And I think that, you know, for me, I don't know what studies are done on ego. I'm sure there's scientists that will tell you what it is and how it works and you know, what to do about it. I don't know any of those things. All I know is that it took me a lot of life lessons to get to a point where I can look in the mirror and tell myself the truth and then have the courage to expose that truth to people around me and say, you know, I have no idea. And I still dance that dance. It's a fine line. It's a fine line when you're getting close to it. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will see you on the other side, and I want to thank you again. I thank you for being a part of the show, and if you want to help me out a little bit, hey, share this with your database. Let people know it's here. You know, send them a link. Tell them to listen to one of the shows and see what we can do. Let's reach more people because I think it's, you know, part of our job here to lead a kick-ass life. If there's one thing that can change someone's way of showing up in the world, just one thing. And you have that at your fingertips. You don't know what it is, but I certainly want to thank you. And you know what? I want to dedicate this show, by the way. And this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gentleman, Nick, he sent me a painting, and he's been listening to the show, and he was inspired by it. And he's an artist, and His website's called Everywhere Nowhere. So Everywhere and K-N-O-W where. So everywherenowhere.com. And he sent me one of his paintings as a thank you, and it's called Only Life, Only Love. And so I want to dedicate this show to Nick. And thank you, Nick, for the painting. I put it up yesterday. You know, I really appreciate your kindness and I appreciate your gratitude. And it was great to receive that parcel yesterday, and I really deeply honored to have your work in my home. So thank you so much. Anyway, we'll see you on the other side, ladies and gentlemen. Take care, have a good one, and watch those egos.
That was kick-ass.